Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day.
On American Family Radio, Today's Issues on American Family Radio, this pre-Thanksgiving edition, Wednesday, November 21st, is the date. Ray Pritchard is joining me from what I assume is the beautiful Kansas City today. Am I correct on that, Ray?
Yes, sir. Walker, good to be with you. And the sun is shining and it's blue sky. It's not even as cold as it was. So we're all, it's a good, it's Thanksgiving Eve.
There you go.
It's a great day, right?
Yeah, it's beautiful here too. We got sunshine out there, Fred.
Absolutely beautiful.
A little chilly this morning, but that's all right. I like it.
I have to scrape the windshield a little bit. That's okay. And, we got to be praying for the 54 million people who are expected to be traveling this weekend.
You know, I'm glad that I'm not one of those.
I am.
You're traveling?
You are. I'm flying. It's a short distance to Nashville.
Today or tomorrow?
Today.
Okay.
Yes, late today. So when I saw that AAA 54 million projection. I'm seeing
now
masses.
Are you bumping from bouncing from Nashville to somewhere else? Are you staying in Nashville?
Two poles to Nashville. Okay. Our youngest daughter lives up in that area.
Well, that's not bad. That's a 45-minute flight.
45-minute flight, as long as you get through TSA. Can you imagine the TSA lines?
Yeah.
54 million people. Now, not all of them are flying. I understand that.
You know, If you're flying out of Atlanta, you should have left yesterday.
That's true.
That's our advice. Leave yesterday.
Uh-huh.
It's going to be crazy in the big cities.
I saw a video. It was a link off of Drudge, I think, but it was a video of L.A. Here it is. It's a video of the 405 in L.A.
Oh, yes.
Yesterday, I think. And it was just cars. Hundreds of cars for miles.
Yeah.
Probably ends up being thousands of cars when you add it all up. But but I can't imagine. And they're just putting along at 3, 4, 5 miles an hour. And that's the day before.
That's the day before.
Or 2 days before Thanksgiving. It's the day before the major travel day. So
just worse today,
Yeah, sometimes I'm glad I live in Mississippi. I know I have to drive an hour to Memphis to get the big city feel.
Uh-huh.
But it's nice. My wife sometimes, she'll say, and I'm bad about this, too. I say, gosh, I got to drive 15 minutes across town to get to the grocery store. Why don't we just have a grocery store right here by our house? And then I'm like, but the people in New York and L.A., they drive an hour and a half to work every day.
Yes.
So I need to stop complaining about my 15-minute ride across big town of Tupelo.
It's nice. I lived in the city of Vancouver, British Columbia for 10 years. And it was at least an hour each way to work. And so I moved here 21 years ago. One of the great blessings was I was 5 minutes from work. And I can go home for lunch every day. Hadn't done that in years.
Yeah.
So there's some real merit to living in smaller communities.
There is.
Yeah.
All right. Well, a couple housekeeping items before we get started on the show today. The first one is that we have our Christmas wristbands available. And this year, we're selling the Christmas wristbands in the green color with the red writing on them. They look very, very nice. Let me go to the website here. AFAstore.net is the website to order your Christmas wristbands. If you order them now, of course, they'll be in before Christmas. Actually, if you order them now, they'll be in a couple weeks before Christmas. So you can wear them and share them and take them to church with you, give them to your Sunday school class. AFAstore.net. is the place to do that. Another important item, Ray, I want to bring you in here, is some programming tomorrow that we're going to have that you wanted to chat about.
Well, a few days ago, Walker, I taped a special program for tomorrow at the 11 o'clock hour, the last 30 minutes of today's issues. I recorded a program called Where Are the Nine? It's a Thanksgiving message. It's the AFR Thanksgiving special from the story in Luke 17 of the 10 lepers who were cured by Jesus, but only one came back to say thanks. And it's a great story because all 10 of them received one miracle, but the man who came back to say thank you, he received a second miracle. And I'm just going to tell you, just tune in because I'm going to tell you how being grateful to God opens the door to miracles and wonderful answers to prayer. So that's going to be tomorrow all across the network at the 11 o'clock hour, which is 11 Central?
That's right.
Noon Eastern and then 10 Mountain, and what would that be? 9 o'clock out on the West Coast.
That's right. So tomorrow, 11 a.m. Central, tune in for Dr. Ray Pritchard's Thanksgiving special. It's promised to be a great, great show. A half hour, is that right, Ray?
That's right.
Okay, excellent. Good deal. Well, Fred, bring us up to date on some things that are going on today.
Well, yesterday, President Trump had his first encounter with the media since the big dust-up over Jim Acosta at CNN. But the president and the first lady were on their way out of the White House towards the helicopter, which was taking them out to the Air Force Base to get on Air Force One. They're spending the Thanksgiving weekend down at what he called the Southern White House down in Florida, where there probably isn't any frost. But anyway, high on the reporter's agenda was a statement that the president had put out earlier in the day yesterday with regards to his reaction, his formal reaction, the administration's formal reaction to the investigation that has gone into the murder of U.S.-based columnist Jamal Khashoggi. All right, it's pretty well been confirmed. It was a Saudi hit team from Saudi Arabia. The question was the leadership in Saudi Arabia aware of this and or even ordered the hit against this journalist? Well, there's been a lot of pressure on the president to basically cut off relations with Saudi Arabia. And yesterday he let it be known he wasn't going to do that. And in talking with reporters on the rope line there outside the White House, he had a couple of reasons that he gave that the United States must continue to have good relationships with the Saudis. Cut number five.
It's a very complex situation. It's a shame, but it is what it is. It's America first for me. It's all about America first. We're not going to give up hundreds of billions of dollars in orders and let Russia, China, and everybody else have them. I'm not going to tell a country that's spending hundreds of billions of dollars and has helped me do one thing very importantly, keep oil prices down so that they're not going to $100 and $150 a barrel. Right now, we have oil prices in great shape. I'm not going to destroy the world economy, and I'm not going to destroy the economy for our country by being foolish with Saudi Arabia.
Well, a few minutes later, his Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, backing up the president. Now, let's keep in mind, there have been sanctions issued against several Saudi citizens in connection with this murder, and those will stay. But Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, much like the president, saying the Saudis, Saudi Arabia is an important ally of the United States. Cut number seven.
It's a mean, nasty world out there. There are important American interests to keep the American people safe, to protect Americans. The United States took a very strong response. We have sanctioned 17 individuals in connection with that investigation. We are at the same time committed to making sure that we place America's national security interests and all the actions that take place in the context of doing the right thing to make sure that America continues to thrive and grow. And when we do that, the world is better off for it too, and the Middle East is better off as well.
Yeah, Secretary Pompeo there is exactly right. He's reaffirming what President Trump said. And, you know, we don't need to take light what happened to this fellow in Turkey at the Saudi Arabian Peninsula, at the Saudi Arabian consulate. What happened there? Because anytime someone's murdered and they're innocent, and there's no due process or anything, that's not a good thing. So that being said, and President Trump said that, he said that what happened to this journalist, what happened to this fella is disgusting, it's unacceptable, and the U.S. will not condone it. But the question then comes after that is, what should the U.S. do? As Secretary Pompeo mentioned, we have sanctioned at least 17 individuals from Saudi Arabia related to this. But beyond that, Ray, you know, this is really why people elected President Trump, and that is that we trusted that he wouldn't take these immature or premature actions that and get involved in these foreign affairs that really, at the end of the day, aren't really our affairs.
Well, the truth of the matter is the whole thing stinks. I mean, the murder of this journalist, it's horrible. And, you know, the Saudis were backpedaling from the beginning. And then they admitted, you know, some of their people did it. And so how much did the Crown Prince know when President Trump said maybe he knew, maybe he didn't, which, of course, is factually true. It just seems to me it's not even a matter of agreeing or disagreeing with the president. It's right. that our hands are tied.
True.
The real world's messy.
Yeah.
And we want quick answers and quick solutions. We don't have any good options here. We laid down the sanctions. We made it clear how repugnant this whole thing is. And, you know, the Turkey is not going to let this thing rest. They're going to keep chewing on this bone until they think they've gotten some kind of justice from Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. I just don't know. It's not even a matter of do I agree with the president. I don't know what else he could have done.
Right.
No, and the point he was making yesterday, and he spent a good deal of time talking to reporters about this, the United States has roughly $400 billion in contracts right now with the Saudis. Over $100 billion of that is for military equipment. And he said, you know, if we were to give up our economic relationship with the Saudis, then the Saudis would just go to China or they would go to Russia to buy this equipment. And he said, I'm not going to do that.
Right.
Not to mention the fact that it involves thousands of jobs here in America for many years to come. The second part in his justification yesterday, the president said that the Saudis are kind of a counter to the other dangers in the Middle East. When we're talking dangers, we're talking, of course, Iran. We're talking Yemen. And he said, the president said, the United States has an obligation to do what it can to protect Israel. And the Saudis, in recent years at least, have become an ally of Israel to a certain extent. Prime Minister Netanyahu has said of Israel, he said, we have a friend in the Saudis right now because we have a common enemy, and that is Iran and also Syria.
Right.
So those were the two reasons that he gave. Now, President Trump, it's not surprising that the Democrats are not accepting this.
Right.
And he's being condemned in the mainstream media. But he's also under attack. The president is under attack from members of his own party. Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky, basically, he disagrees with the president. He says it's a sign of weakness not to stand up to Saudi Arabia. Sometimes when you have two evils, maybe you don't support either side. Also, Lindsey Graham, South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham, who is, you know, he and Trump have been on pretty good terms lately, also disagreed with President's statement, saying America must not lose its moral voice. He said it is not in our national security interest to look the other way when it comes to the brutal murder of Mr. Jamal Khashoggi. Well, here's the thing. We have economic relations. We, the United States, have economic relations with a number of countries whose human rights record is not very good.
Yes, that's right.
China tops that list. We have billions and billions and billions of dollars in trade relations with China. And please, everybody knows the way they treat citizens that don't line up with the government's idea of how they should behave.
Right.
Including many Christians who are under persecution in that country. We talked yesterday, you know, Turkey, very obviously very much involved with this story. Look at the way they treated Pastor Brunson. Kept him in prison for 2 years. So we're talking about a lot of countries that we have business dealings with that have very negative records, human rights records. So
right.
I would like to sit down and talk to Senator Rand Paul and Senator Graham and say, okay, if you feel this way, we have some kind of moral obligation
right.
to break off relations with the Saudis. How do you feel about our relationships with China?
Yeah, to act like there's these morally pure countries out there and then there's these repugnant countries out there and we need to pick our sides. There's not a pure country out there. They all got their problems. The U.S. actually does have good moral standing historically in the world. But these Middle Eastern countries, I'm telling you, it's the wild, wild west. I mean, they had these civil wars. They kill each other. They bomb each other. The jihadis within the Islamic faith, they have their internal battles and they're bloody and they're nasty. So to act like there's one good actor over a bad actor here, there's not. Turkey has its own problems. Do we need to kick Turkey out of NATO because they jail our American pastor who's innocent? Do we need to kick Turkey out of NATO because they stage a fake coup so that they could jail dissidents? You know, all of this comes up, and at the end of the day, these countries don't have a really a moral high ground. What President Trump is talking about is what is in America's best interest, and he would argue that continuing our financial relationship is in America's best interest.
You know, I think any American president would end up doing exactly what President Trump has done. I mean, maybe use a little different rhetoric, who knows? Mm-hmm. But I think whether it's Obama or whether it's George W. Bush or Bill Clinton, in the end, we don't have any really good options, right?
Right. No.
And the criticism of the president is, frankly, that he was giving just pragmatic reasons, and people aren't used to that kind of bottom-line talk from the American president.
True.
But he said it's America first, which people don't want to hear. But I don't think that any other president would have come to, we aren't going to send troops over there, we aren't going to invade them, we aren't going to break off diplomatic relationships.
Right.
Yeah, what happened is terrible. It was terrible. But we don't have better options than denouncing it and putting the sanctions on. What else could we do?
Well, here's the other aspect to all of this, the hypocrisy of the mainstream media. This feigning of indignation over what the president has done in this case. Where was the mainstream media when then-President Barack Obama made the deal with Iran?
True.
Sending pallets of cash to the Iranians, a well-known state sponsor of terrorism around the world.
Right.
A hater of America and Israel.
Up until President Trump getting them released, they had several Americans jailed, including an American pastor.
That's right.
So...
That's right. So, again, I'm always perturbed with the mainstream media and their double standard when it comes to how they covered Barack Obama and how they're covering President Trump.
Yeah, good points there. All right, what you got next?
Well, there is a runoff election coming up in Mississippi on Tuesday of next week. And I'm sure the candidates in that runoff, Cindy Hyde-Smith for the Republicans, Mr. Espy for the Democrats, they won't be taking the Thanksgiving weekend off. They'll be campaigning. But last night, they held their one and only debate. And the mainstream media, again, the focus of their coverage of the debate last night, the stories that came out this morning, had to do going back to an incident. We talked about this yesterday, guys. The incident involving Cindy Hyde-Smith when she was during the election campaign leading up to the November 6th election. She was in Tupelo, Mississippi, campaigning. Somebody introduced her, and Cindy Hyde-Smith said, "This is a dear friend of mine. I'd go to a public hanging with him." Mm-hmm. Now, she has been roundly condemned for that because there have been some people that have tried to link that to being a racist statement. She did not say lynching. She said public hanging.
Right, which was a common practice for capital punishment back in 30, 40, 50 years ago.
Yes. So last night.
Maybe a little longer.
At some point in the debate last night, we knew it was going to come up, and Cindy Hyde-Smith responded to all the controversy over that statement. Cut number three.
For anyone that was offended by my comments, I certainly apologize. There was no ill will, no intent whatsoever in my statements. I also recognize that this comment was twisted and it was turned into a weapon to be used against me, a political weapon used for nothing but personal and political gain by my opponent. That's the type of politics Mississippians are sick and tired of.
Secretary Espy.
Well, no one twisted your comments because your comments were live. It came out of your mouth. And I don't know what's in your heart, but we all know what came out of your mouth. And it went viral, within the first 3 minutes around the world. And so it's caused our state harm. It's given our state another black eye.
So there you have it. Went back and forth, and, the Democrats continue to talk about it. The other development on this front was yesterday. Walmart announced publicly that the $2,000 it had given to the Hyde-Smith campaign, the runoff election campaign, it's requested that Hyde-Smith give that money back.
Yeah, yesterday afternoon I hosted Focal Point, I hosted Brian Fisher's show for an hour. The last segment I took calls, and because you and I, Fred, discussed this yesterday when it broke, the news story broke about the Walmart, and I had to tread softly because I had a call from a fellow by the name of Curtis in Mobile, Alabama, and he said that he was offended by Senator Hyde Smith's comments. Others called in and said that her words were being twisted and framed in a way that they weren't intended. And so there were both sides of the story. But at the end of the day, when you listen to the comments and you know the history of that saying and what it means is, from my understanding, is that I would do anything with this person, even things that aren't popular or common. And so it basically means we're really good friends here. So that being said, I don't think I think the Democrats and the media are using this to do anything they can to try to pick up this seat in Mississippi, similar to what they did in Alabama with Roy Moore. Totally different situations when it comes to the candidate, but similar strategy on behalf of the Democrats.
Well, in the first place, she certainly regrets saying it. It's an unusual phrase, right?
It is.
I go to a public hanging. I don't think I've ever heard anybody say that. So, but there's no, other than the oddity of it, it's not a, she's not making a statement about lynching, and it's been moved out, you know, it's been twisted for political purposes. Let me ask you guys, you're on the ground there in Mississippi. Is there any polling? Is there any sense of I guess I'm asking you, who's going to win when the vote comes in next week?
Well, in the November 6th election, the conservative vote in Mississippi was kind of split between Sidney Hyde Smith, who was appointed to that senator's seat by the governor in the wake of the retirement of a longtime Republican senator in this state. And many conservatives did not vote for Hyde Smith. They voted for Chris McDaniel. And so the conservative vote was split in the general election. If everybody who voted for Cindy Hyde Smith and Chris McDaniel in the November 6th election, if they come back and vote next Tuesday, she will win easily.
Yeah. And I think, Ray, I think to from what I'm hearing, the concern in Mississippi on behalf of Republicans is not necessarily that Democrats are just that excited and they're just going to, you know, Democrats are just going to show up out of nowhere. I think it's making sure there's enough Republican voter turnout, considering it's a runoff, you know, runoff. I mean, it's kind of like a primary in a sense that turnout tends to be historically down. And so that's really the concern from what I'm hearing. And then, you know, you have your Chris McDaniel supporters, some who have hard feelings towards the establishment, have hard feelings towards Cindy Hyde Smith based on the race from a couple weeks ago. So, but I think at the end of the day, the people of Mississippi, they're smart, like you said yesterday. They know what's going on here, and I think they'll end up making the right decision.
It would be quite a shock if the Democrat won in a statewide election in Mississippi. Isn't Mr. Trump coming in for a rally?
That's
right. He's got a couple of rallies on Monday, one here in our home base of Tupelo, and another rally down in Biloxi. In fact, Tupelo was mentioned by the president yesterday in his chat with the reporters.
He did, didn't he? I saw that.
Oh, yes. That's beautiful. Beautiful.
Yeah, it'll be the first visit of a U.S. president, I think, to this area since 1934.
Yeah, and we have my father-in-law works at the airport. Ah. Well, he works for a company who rents space at the airport, and they take apart big 747s. He's in charge of all that. And I said, do you think Air Force One can land in Tupelo? And he said, oh, it can.
Yeah.
He said, you have to adjust the fuel level and the weight and stuff, but they can do it. So Tupelo, good. Mississippi will host Air Force One and the president come Monday. Quite historic. Today's Issues, American Family Radio. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Tomorrow is Thanksgiving Day, and we hope you'll be with friends and family, just like the Today's Issues crew. In our time slot, you'll hear the Brooklyn Tabernacle Choir Thanksgiving Special and the Dr. Ray Pritchard Special, Where Are the Nine?
The secret of a thankful heart is not to forget what God has done for you.
Have a safe and happy Thanksgiving weekend, and then join us again Monday for today's issues. Weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, the popularity of our spiritual heritage tours each year continues to grow. Those are our tours to Washington, D.C., Mount Vernon, Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. Those are two separate trips, but a lot of folks go on both of them. But the popularity continues to grow, and we sell out 2 or 3 months in advance every year. So we're letting you know when our June and September tours are. Just go to our website, spiritualheritagetours.com. Spiritualheritagetours.com. There's two tours. There's one to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown, and then there's a separate trip, but they're back-to-back to Washington, D.C., and to George Washington's Mount Vernon. So, if you want to go on those tours with us, just go to the website, spiritualheritagetours.com. SpiritualHeritageTours.com and check out all the info.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Caitlin Bird. I'm a nursing major and I'm a junior. The School of Nursing here at TMU, it's different than any other, you know, university or college out there. Every time we come into class, no matter which nursing professor it is, we always begin in devotion and prayer, and we become a family. They actually allow the students to get up and do devotion and prayer. We pray with each other and for each other, and that's just what sets us apart from any other school of nursing out there.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
It's not every day a president gets to pardon a pair of turkeys, not political turkeys, honest-to-goodness turkeys with feathers. President Trump granting pardons to peas and carrots.
The winner of this vote was decided by a fair and open election conducted on the White House website. This was a fair election. Unfortunately, carrots refused to concede and demanded a recount, and we're still fighting with carrots. And I will tell you, we've come to a conclusion. Carrots, I'm sorry to tell you, the result did not change. It's too bad for carrots.
That's right. The online voters chose to pardon peas, but President Trump showed compassion by saving both toms. The big birds arrived Sunday from South Dakota, spent the night in the Willard Hotel just across from the White House. They will spend their golden years at Gobbler's Rest in Blacksburg, Virginia. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments at afr.net. Past broadcasts of today's issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of today's issues.
Welcome back to the second segment of today's issues on American Family Radio. Dr. Ray Pritchard here with me, and myself is Walker Wildman, and Fred Jackson here, the usual host. Well, Ray is a usual host, and Fred sits on every day and brings us the news. But the other two original hosts, and my dad, Tim Wildman, and Ed Vitagliano, they'll be back next week. So the full crew, the full team, will be back next week for today's issues. And then tomorrow, as Ray mentioned, from 11 to 11:30, we'll have a Thanksgiving special that's brought to you by Dr. Ray Pritchard. And then Friday, I'm sure we'll have a best of Trivia Friday. So a lot of good programming coming your way in the next few days. Just stay tuned to American Family Radio. Fred, let's jump back into these news stories.
Yeah, well, we talked about this yesterday, a federal judge in San Francisco saying that he opposes the policy that President Trump has on the border, and that with regards to these migrants that are coming up from Honduras and El Salvador. You will remember back a couple of weeks ago, the president said these migrants who choose to come through a formal border crossing will be considered. If they ask for asylum, they will be considered. But the president said for those who attempt to cross the border illegally, in other words, wade across the Rio Grande or whatever the case may be, no asylum appeal will be heard. Well, the federal judge said, I'm declaring that no matter how people try to get into this country, legally or illegally, that I deem them that the United States must offer everybody asylum, all right? Or at least be heard, make asylum claims heard. So yesterday, again, talking to reporters along the line as he headed to the helicopter there outside the White House. The president talked about that. Needless to say, federal judge, the Ninth Circuit, which is the most overturned appeals circuit in the country, folks, the president said, we've got to do something about this. Cut number six.
You go to the Ninth Circuit and it's a disgrace, and I'm going to put in a major complaint because you cannot win, if you're us, a case in the Ninth Circuit. And I think it's a disgrace. Every case that gets filed in the Ninth Circuit, we get beaten, and then we end up having to go to the Supreme Court, like the travel ban, and we won. The Ninth Circuit, we're going to have to look at that, because every case, no matter where it is, they file it practically. They file it in what's called the Ninth Circuit. This was an Obama judge. And I'll tell you what, it's not going to happen like this anymore.
So the question is, and I watched the president's impromptu news conference there on the line yesterday, and he made these comments. And I was wondering, okay, what is the president talking about? That, number one, you know, what is the background for his comments? And I think it's this, is that, and this case against the president's policy on who can apply for asylum, the case against that was brought by the ACLU.
Right.
So the ACLU went to this one federal judge, an Obama appointee, and they probably had a pretty good idea they were going to win their case because of the way activist judges are today. And I think what the president was saying in his response yesterday is he's getting a little frustrated with left-wing groups like the ACLU finding themselves a judge somewhere, this in this particular case in San Francisco, that they know is going to rule in their favor. But then this judge makes a decision that affects the whole country.
Right.
That's the problem. And I think that's what he wants the Department of Justice to address. The Senate, I'm not sure what body will do that. It's perhaps the United States Supreme Court. But say, you know, you can't, when it involves, let's say, the border between the United States and Mexico, why does one federal judge in San Francisco have the authority to make that decision which affects a national security policy?
Yes, and President Trump, I'm sorry, Attorney General Jeff Sessions, the former Attorney General, several months ago filed a complaint, or at least he filed a press release that talked about this issue. And what we're talking about, to be more specific but not get too far in the weeds here, and that is something called nationwide injunctions. And these nationwide injunctions that federal judges are issuing, they apply, if you will, the ruling and the case at hand applies nationwide, which historically is only supposed to be used in rare circumstances. But these judges, like out in California, they're using these nationwide injunctions on way too many cases. And like you said, it is giving them way too much power. Almost it's giving them Supreme Court-like power, at least until the Supreme Court steps in and overrules them. So it's very dangerous here.
So, Walker, does that mean then that this isn't going to be solved by legislation? It doesn't sound like. I mean, is this a case where if we want to pull back on these nationwide injunctions, the Supreme Court is going to have to speak to this, right?
Yeah, the Supreme, we really need either one of two things. America either needs the Supreme Court to address nationwide injunctions and clarify their historical meaning and really rein back in these federal judges from using this on, they use it nonchalantly every other day, it seems like. Also, it would be, legislation could rein in these federal judges if Congress would clarify when nationwide injunctions should be used here, but this is a big problem, and that is these federal judges here issuing these nationwide injunctions, because just to be practical here, you could have, let's just say, you know, Jim Bob sues the local grocery store because he slipped and fell in the parking lot. With these nationwide injunctions, let's say that the judge ruled that the grocery store needed to immediately pave a new parking lot because it was too slippery. Well, now judges can issue nationwide injunctions that could make every grocery store in the country pave their parking lot, even though the case is specific to one grocery store in one city where this incident occurred. these judges are taking one scenario and applying their ruling to the entire country, and that's what's creating problems. President Trump, thankfully, he's on to the problem here.
Well, it's something like this is needed. And the Democrats and their allies, like the ACLU, have been successful in using these nationwide injunctions. They tried the same thing. I think it was a federal judge in Hawaii that ruled on the president's policy with regards to refugees or people claiming to be refugees coming into this country, which the United States Supreme Court eventually upheld the president's policy on that. And the president is fairly optimistic. He'll likely go to the Supreme Court on this one, right, and he'll likely win on that. But just stop and think about this for a moment. A judge, one federal judge, hearing from the ACLU, decides that thousands of people who decide to come into this country illegally, that the federal government must listen to and deal with and process their asylum claim.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Right.
That's absolutely crazy.
Yeah, if this judge were to use his authority correctly, even if the judge and President Trump disagree on the facts here and on what's constitutional and what's not, at best the judge has the authority to allow the plaintiffs here to get through the asylum process. If he thinks the president doesn't have the authority to end asylum for the individuals named in this specific case, at best he has the authority to grant them temporary relief, if you will, and allow their asylum claim to process. But this judge over there has no authority to apply his ruling across the board to millions of asylum seekers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really, you have two different problems here. One is the problem of the law itself, the ruling as it came down. But then you have, separate from it, the jurisdictional question, which is, I think that's what the president was trying to get to in his comments yesterday, that everybody knows if you're left-leaning, the place to go is the Ninth Circuit, right?
That's right.
If you want a liberal judge, head out to San Francisco. There's a reason they filed this case, this lawsuit. They filed it in the Ninth Circuit, not down in the Fifth Circuit, because it would get a different kind of hearing. They got exactly what they wanted. They got a judge who not just upheld for them, but passed one of these nationwide things, which would seem to go way, seems to, which would seem to violate the whole principle of having different circuits for different parts of the country. So this is something the Supreme Court is going to have to address. There's no other solution, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's stick with the border story. I was reading a Gateway Pundit article just before coming in. And they have their reporters, obviously, who are covering these migrants as they come up ever closer. And by the way, hundreds are getting closer to the U.S. border as we speak. But they interviewed this one woman from Honduras who is now in, I believe, in the Tijuana area of Mexico. She was complaining about the quality of the free food that she is receiving. She thinks it's absolutely despicable. Baked beans or something like that. And she's just appalled at the quality of food that the government of Mexico is giving her. She wants far better treatment.
And so she was complaining about it?
She was complaining about it.
Yikes.
Can you imagine these are the people who are coming to the border and wanting asylum, and as the Gateway Pundit analyst said, imagine what happens when they get into the United States, this kind of attitude of entitlement. I'm entitled to free education. I'm entitled to free medical care. I'm entitled to free housing, the whole thing. But you know what? It's really interesting. The mainstream media doesn't talk to those people. The other thing that we now know from a couple of sources, there are now hundreds of criminals amongst these, mostly, and folks, you're going to see pictures every night on the mainstream media and the evening news, mostly of women and children. But the vast, vast, vast majority of the thousands of these migrants that are coming north are young men. And hundreds, we now know, have criminal records. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, Mexico's ambassador to Washington confirmed this. It was first reported by some of the conservative media, quoting administrative sources. But the Mexico's ambassador to Washington yesterday, he was giving an address in D.C., he confirmed, Geronimo Gutierrez, I believe his name is, he confirmed that there are hundreds of criminals. The government of Mexico is admitting this, and these people coming north. Yesterday, also, Homeland Security Secretary Kristian Nielsen was in San Diego, gave a press conference, and also talked about the criminals that are coming north. Cut number one.
Some continue to report that the caravan is made up of mostly women and children who are fleeing violence in the Northern Triangle. The reality is that the majority of the caravan that we see is made up of single adult males or teenage males. In addition, we have identified over 500 criminals, to include known gang members, contained in the flow of the caravan. We know that organizers of the caravan have been pushing women and children and others to the front of the caravan in hope that law enforcement will not engage them. This is particularly dangerous given the unusual propensity for violence we have seen in this caravan, the assaults on border police in multiple countries, and the use of incendiary devices.
So let's go back to the controversy that the president created when he called this an invasion. Remember the Jim Acosta thing?
Yep.
Jim Acosta didn't ask a question. This is the CNN reporter that day when all of this controversy over pushing away the microphone, et cetera. He made a declaration. He said, Mr. President, you're wrong.
Yeah, and I want to challenge you.
I want to challenge you. Mm-hmm. This is not an invasion. It's migrants. Did you listen to the words that Kristian Nielsen, the Homeland Security Secretary, just said there? They're arranging where people stand in the caravan. Mm-hmm. This is a strategy.
They're using the women and children.
That's sure. Right.
For their purposes.
This is a deliberate strategy. Who's coaching them to do this? Mm-hmm. Now, the picture that the mainstream media and the Democrats want you to believe is these are just people who have been persecuted in Honduras and El Salvador, been terribly treated. They're fleeing for their lives. That's not the case. Mm-hmm. We do know there is proof that George Soros and others are funding these groups that are coming up. We said it before. It's really interesting. Some of these people allegedly fleeing persecution in these countries are carrying the flag of their countries with them.
Right.
They're mighty proud to be Honduran. Mm-hmm. They're mighty proud to be from El Salvador. If you're fleeing persecution from a government, do you carry the flag of that country?
No, that doesn't make much sense.
This is a circus.
Right.
This is a public relations campaign, all designed to make President Trump and his administration look bad. But also, they know the mainstream media will go along with their little plot to make it look like they're all being persecuted and they're just fleeing for their lives. They know the mainstream media will tell the story exactly the way they want the story told. Mm-hmm.
Ray, what do you think about this?
Well, the whole thing's a setup, just like Fred said.
Yeah.
We're not saying that there are no legitimate asylum seekers in that group, probably are, right? Mm-hmm. But this is a political deal. Somebody, George Soros or whoever, is putting down big money because it's not, you're not going to be able to survive on your own just the hundreds and hundreds, couple thousand miles or whatever it
That's
is
right.
from Guatemala and Honduras up to the U.S. border. So there is tremendous money behind this. And the real goal here is to embarrass the president.
Yeah.
I think he's handled this very well.
He has. He has. And really, it hasn't turned out to be as bad of a PR nightmare as I thought it would be. Mm-hmm. Because I think that as they've gotten to the border, thankfully, because President Trump and the Homeland Security team did harden the border, they put up a lot of fencing, they sent a lot of more resources, many more resources down there, and I think that kind of stalled the caravan. I honestly believe they were wanting to barge through a port of entry into the country. And they got here and saw barbed wire fences and barricades, and some of them probably said, this probably isn't the best idea. But to both of your points, I was watching, and I know I mentioned this yesterday or the day before that also, but I was watching a video. There was a reporter down with the caravan traveling with them, and there was food trucks, nice food trucks. There was medicine trucks. I mean, stuff that that doesn't just appear unless somebody's sending money to sponsor it. So somebody's definitely behind this. I think it'll eventually come out who paid for all of this and who organized it. But nonetheless, President Trump has done a good job handling this, and I think it'll go away hopefully in the next few weeks.
And I think we ought to pause and just give thanks for our military people that are down there, our Border Patrol people. Listen, folks, they will not be gathered around a Thanksgiving table tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be on the line down there.
Right.
Doing their very best to guard our national security and to do a job that, quite frankly, you know, they must get disgusted, these Border Patrol people, because they've got the mainstream media in America making them look bad.
Yeah.
They've got the Democratic Party making them look bad, making them look evil, kind of like Kamala Harris, the Democrat senator from California, who last week referred to ICE agents as akin to the KKK.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine how disheartening that must be. These military people, the Border Patrol people, they're down there. They're doing the job that they're paid to do. They're doing the job that we've asked them to do. And you've got the media and you've got the Democrats condemning them for mm-hmm. what they do. And we need to remember these people. They have families back home that would love to have those people home for Thanksgiving. But they're going to be down there doing their job protecting yeah. this country.
And the good thing here is that to try to shine a positive light is that they have the law enforcement in our country has a commander in chief who supports them.
Yes.
And that makes a huge difference because mm-hmm. before 2016, President Obama was very, very questionable on his support of law enforcement. And you know, these different officers didn't know if the president had their back or not. But President Trump, to his credit, has stood firm in supporting these troops, and he even bragged on them yesterday in that same press conference,
mm-hmm.
Or press gathering that you were talking about. One of the reporters said, you know, what do you say about the troops who won't be home for Thanksgiving? And he said we should be proud of them
mm-hmm.
because they're willing to serve their country and miss Thanksgiving.
That's right.
And so we need to thank them and be proud of them. So he shines a positive light on that.
Yes. We'll hope a lot of them will be home for Christmas,
mm-hmm.
That's our prayer. Well, you know, the president has a lot on his plate these days, and late last night, the Trump administration announced that it had reapproved a waiver that would require certain beneficiaries in Kentucky work as a condition of receiving health care coverage from Medicaid, 5 months after the initial plan was struck down by a judge.
Imagine that.
And listen, folks, just so you understand what we're talking about here, in Kentucky, they made a change in the Medicaid program. In other words, people who are signing up for Medicaid, they must enroll in Medicaid to work, volunteer, or take classes as a condition of staying enrolled. Now, the aim here is not to be mean, but the aim here is to get people off of Medicaid as quickly as possible, get them into paying jobs, into companies that have health insurance, to lower the cost of Medicaid. Now, when Barack Obama was in office, he actually, and this is a story in the Washington Examiner, where it says Republicans and Democrats disagree over the purpose of Medicaid. Under Obamacare, listen to this, folks, states were allowed to expand it being Medicare, to people making less than roughly $17,000 a year, regardless of whether they worked or had a disability. So everybody gets it.
Mm-hmm.
So under Obamacare, Medicaid exploded,
right?
The expense of it. And what Kentucky is trying to do with the support of the Trump administration is, all right, you've got folks on Medicaid. What we're going to try to do is help them out, to train them for jobs. Perhaps, you know, they lost their job because of technology advancements or whatever the case may be. We're going to train them. We're going to pay for it. We're going to pay for the training to help you get a job and get off. But I'll tell you what, again, the left is all upset about this. They're being cruel. And I know the stories that are going to come out are going to paint the Trump administration of being mean-hearted.
Mm-hmm.
No. Why would even taxpayers in this country would, as Americans, want people to keep dependent on the government? You know, for most of us, we want to minimize dependence on the government. Mm-hmm. But you know what? The Democrats, through the years, I think this has been a strategy, is make more and more people dependent on the government for the so they'll keep voting for that government.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And many, if any American who works hard for a living, they would agree that work requirements mm-hmm. should be administered for these Medicaid reimbursements. I think that's a no-brainer, and it's good to see Kentucky and some of these other conservative states enforcing that, because that's going to save a lot of money in waste and fraud in the
yeah,
years to come.
But as the story said, you know, you had groups opposing it go to a federal judge
yep.
To put it on
that's
hold.
That's what they do.
That is what they do all the time. I don't know where this federal judge was, but anyway, I hope it's something that other states are going to bring in. Mm-hmm. Because that kind of spending, and again, it's not cruelty. It's, again, trying to really – Medicaid is kind of a bridging financing mechanism to get people from point A to point B. The problem is that we've had successive governments who are content for people to stay in the middle mm-hmm. and not really incentivize the idea of going out and finding work, becoming independent once again. And it's healthy. Mm-hmm. You know, having a job is a healthy
That's
thing.
Right.
It shouldn't be geared at, or
it's a morale booster.
It's a morale booster mm-hmm. to be able to have good work. So
you know, Fred, there's only one problem with what you said. It makes too much sense. I mean, it makes too much sense. It's too practical. Mm-hmm. It's too logical. It's too honorable. The reason the Democrats do what they do is because it does work. You created and it shouldn't. We wish it didn't, right? Mm-hmm. But they know if they can create a class dependent upon government handouts, and they're going to tell them it's coming from the Democrat Party, well, they're going to be voting Democrat for the rest of their lives. And so that is what we are up against. We are up against people who don't appreciate the power of just common sense of what you've just been saying.
Yeah, and I think this Kentucky situation is just a microcosm of the what's going on in our country right now, the battle, the ideological battle in our country. I think you have one party, the Democrats, who I think as a strategy want more and more people dependent upon them. Dinesh D'Souza's Hillary's America movie, remember back before the 2016 yep. election, and he in this documentary or docudrama, I guess you would call it, basically pointed out that that is a strategy of the Democrats, make more and more people dependent on the government so those people say in their minds, hey, I don't want the gravy train to stop. I need to keep voting for Democrats, as opposed to Republicans, where the idea is, and this is where President Trump, Make America Great Again, comes in. That whole ideology is to create jobs, and he's been extremely successful in that. Unemployment rates for people across the board, Hispanics, for African Americans, at historic lows. Mm-hmm. And so it's working. When people have jobs, they become less dependent on the government, and they have pride
yeah.
in themselves. They can go out and they've earned that salary. They go out and buy that refrigerator, buy that stove, buy that car,
yep.
whatever the case may be.
Yep.
So you have that ideological battle that's unfolding in this country.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Conservatives are for individual liberty, freedom, free speech, and individual prosperity based on the free market. And all those principles lead to freedom prospering across the world because it takes government out of individuals' lives.
Amen.
Today's Issues, American Family Radio. We'll be back, Dr. Ray Pritchard and myself, with Steve Jordahl in about 5 minutes after the news.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.